Welcome to Foul Players Radio, your podcast for arts, entertainment, and pop culture. My name is Michael Spedden, your host. Every episode features interesting people with fun, fascinating stories about their journeys in the performing arts. Authors, actors, dancers, writers, musicians, athletes, comics, you name it. Folks who are center stage, backstage, on camera, or behind the scenes. Sit back and listen. Let's have some fun. Foul Players Radio is a production of the Foul Players Group and a proud member of the SJ Network. And welcome again to the quarantine edition of Foul Players Radio. And I hope everybody out there is enjoying this holiday season. We're having a nice one here in Maryland. Darren Kaymeyer is our guest this week from the great state of Minnesota. He's a fellow podcaster and a voiceover artist. He runs the DK Project podcast. We had a great time kind of double interviewing each other last week, talking about past experiences, things like stand-up comedy, performing that we've done, broadcasting experience when his and a whole bunch of other things. We had a really good time getting to know each other. Subscribe for free to Foul Players Radio on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Podchaser, Podfriend, Pocket Casts, Overcast, Castro, CastBox, Deezer, iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict, Listen Notes, Player FM, and Podcast Index. Man, we're getting around, aren't we? We'll be back with Darren Kaymeyer right after these words.
Are you looking for a one-of-a-kind gift this holiday season? Or is your decor just missing something? How about a flatfish? What's a flatfish? Blue Earth Works, a pottery studio based in Wilmington, North Carolina, produces flatfish along with other handmade, functional, and sculptural pottery. Each piece is handmade, so everyone is unique and a little surprising. Remember, if you're able, please support a small business this holiday season. Shop online at blueearthworks.etsy.com, or if you're in Maryland, head on over to Kathy's Corner Shop in Northeast Maryland at 100 South Main Street and ask to see The Flatfish by Chaz. They'll know what you mean.
Hey, this is Don Smith from the Life Radio Show. If you've always wanted to learn more about the world of low-budget filmmaking and even lower-budget comedy, tune into the Life Radio Show. You can live stream the show at WWSU1069.org on Tuesdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern, or find us wherever you find podcasts and like and follow the Life Radio Show on Facebook for live video and other shenanigans.
I'm Michael, the host of the semi-monthly podcast, In a City Like Yours. Join me as I chat with interesting people with interesting life stories. You can listen to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. You can follow us on Twitter at IACLYS Podcast, as well as on Facebook and Instagram at In a City Like Yours Podcast. Please feel free to let me know what you think. And keep coming back for the many interesting stories in a city like yours.
So welcome, Darren. Welcome to Foul Players Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here. And it's been nice to meet you. I've met you amongst a lot of other people through the SJ Network lately. And welcome aboard, and good to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I like your setup here. This is a neat idea. I like your microphone too. That's old school, eh?
Oh no, it looks old school. It's actually pretty new school here. It's a Shure, but it has that old school look to it. You know, the old radio hall, the old Sennheiser, and the old 1940s radio station kind of look here. I love it. It's a good microphone too, and I kind of like your setup as well. You know, I like your whole studio there. I've got to get myself a studio look. You know, I'm building one in my garage right now that's not quite done, but yeah. I like how you've got your Big Lebowski thing going there with your DK project in the back, and you've got a can of something that says DK on it. What's that?
Custom mug. Look at that old school microphone on there. Can you see that one?
Oh yeah, exactly.
For me. kind of cool. I also have the, not that this is great podcasting, but I also have the Big Lebowski candle.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Burning that for the old boy. He's not doing so well.
Yeah. I heard that. I heard that.
Yeah, what a shame, man.
It is. That's a shame. He's such an icon, you know, and not only because of that role, but so many other things he's done. He's just done such a great job in.
Yeah. Yeah, he really has. It's interesting how often that reference comes up in my world. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a time period where I was referenced as the dude quite a bit. So maybe that's what it is. It's something, I don't know, but we got to hope for the best that he'll pull out of that. But anyway, the DK Project is my podcast, and we're kind of comedy-based morning show, kind of a variety show.
Okay.
How it all started was, my now brother-in-law, he'd been my best friend since I was like 8. And, we've cataloged all these great memories together, and we were going to write a movie. Mm-hmm. And we could never get the movie to stick. We never had all the pieces to the puzzle, but we had all these, you know, and still to, you know, every day I talk to him and we laugh our asses off and have a good time. So anyway, I 2.5 years ago, I started on morning radio because it's always been on my dream list to be on the radio. And, turned out the station owner and the format wasn't really my forte. So I just decided, hey, why don't I build a podcast studio and we'll do this movie and we'll make it into a podcast. Cause we've been listening to, the Pete and Sebastian show since it started. I think it's been out for like 7 years, every episode.
Mm-hmm.
We've kind of modeled our show after that, which, you know, obviously they're different people than, you know, living in different worlds than we are, but and it worked out great, you know, for a strong year and a little bit. He was the ultimate co-host. We had stories on top of stories, and we'd interview people and we'd bring in guests from time to time, but then, you know, life gets in the way as always, and his real business kind of took off. So what I've done is kind of brought in some other co-hosts, because we're going to try and go to 3 shows a week and okay. make a morning show so that, you know, if you're looking for local, not news, but like our funny take on news or our funny take on current sports, and, you know, you'll be able, we'll record in the morning and it'll be available early afternoon. So you can get not real time, but about as close as you can get with podcasting.
Okay.
You know, and then, you know, down the road, there's been talk of like YouTube Live or some of these live streaming things, to where if you wanted to get it live, you could make it a real morning show. But we're still in the infancy and kind of moving all the pieces together. Right now we're pumping out about two shows a week, moving to 3. I'm just kind of putting a few missing pieces together.
Right.
I'm having a blast. It's been the funnest thing I've done ever.
I find it enjoyable myself too. I started doing it about 5 years ago, and then I've been doing it on my own for about almost the last 3 now, and the people that you meet and, you know, the content that you put out and everything, and just, you know, the people that are willing to sit down and talk and share their stories and everything, I find it really enjoyable. You know, it's almost, I mean, the goal of mine, and I'm sure yours is probably pretty similar in a lot of ways. It's almost like an oral history of some people's careers when you have them on, you know, and then, you know, mine's almost like an oral history of, you know, entertainment around here. Now, mine's gotten a little more national lately, as I'm sure yours probably has, bringing in the guests as part of SJ. Yeah. It's enjoyable. You kind of get to put your own spin on it. You get to have interesting people on there. People get an opportunity to listen to you and hear of people they may have not heard before, or they're, you know, it's good for people that are, to encourage people that are, you know, not as well versed or not as established, you know, to get their movies and TV shows and plugs out there and everything.
There's a lot of great connections to be made. The networking in this industry is phenomenal. You know, mm-hmm. I come from an industry where we don't network at all.
And right.
It's really been refreshing to get out and meet people, and some of the people that I've interviewed and the stories that, you know, they've told, it's just fascinating. On, you know, everybody's got their own little thing going on in their own little world, you know, even though right now we're all being separated by the pandemic and whatnot, it's really interesting to, you know, take a 45-minute deep dive into somebody and try and ask the questions that, you know, maybe people are wanting to know, but more that other people haven't asked, and questions that, you know, not the standard cookie cutter crap, you know, give me something deep, you know, and have fun with it. I've interviewed a lot of people who, you know, you got to loosen them up. You got to chisel away the hard candy shell in the beginning and then, you know, have some fun with them. And boy, I've had some great ones on. We've really, you know, gotten in depth with a few people and, you know, we'll do follow-ups, you know, where we'll circle back with them and see what's, you know, what's been happening or how this or that came together. I've really run into some interesting people and learned a lot. You know, there's a lot going on that the everyday person just isn't aware of, you know, because they're going to their job, they're punching in, they're going back home and they're, you know, feeding the dog and running the kids or whatever the hell you do. And so it's nice to kind of throw that out there. And, you know, there's a lot of 1.6 million podcasters out there right now, which thanks to the pandemic, you know, it seems like everybody with a microphone is doing something now.
But
you know, that same thing happened in real estate, you know, when everybody was making a ton of money in real estate, everybody jumped in and, you know, just like that, they'll go away, go back to their real jobs once they can and things get back to normal. So it's just interesting. And it's interesting to see all the different formats and different types of podcasts that are out there. I have a fun time because you can't really spin down the dial and look, you know, just come across a radio station anymore. You have to like kind of search for certain genres or certain, you know, whatever. So obviously it makes it more of a challenge to get listeners because, you know, they're not going to just come across you. You have to find a way to get to them unless it's word of mouth, you know, of course, because in the olden days with terrestrial radio, they could just spin the dial and, you know, maybe find something new or hit scan and then find something new. Or with podcasts, you know, they gotta kind of be looking for you. So it's a different dynamic than what we're used to.
Right. And the thing is, I think that's good about podcasting. And the thing I really like about it, because there's a whole bunch of them that I listen to as well, is that, you know, when you get in the car and go somewhere, you can find exactly what you want to listen to. It makes your drive enjoyable and you're listening to the show. Yeah. You know, a lot of times with terrestrial radio, I mean, they're stuck with the regular schedule. You know, and if you're not in, if I didn't want to listen to, you know, whoever was on there at the time, then I was kind of SOL. You know, with this, it gives you a lot more choice. You can go to it whenever you want to and listen to it over and over and over if you like.
You can pick up where you left off. That's always nice in case you got to make some stops or whatever. We've got a local morning show here that is kind of what inspired me to get into radio way back when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. But it was and it still is a race to turn the channel, you know, because as soon as they sign off, I do not want to hear that next guy who comes in and definitely don't want to hear the music he's going to play. And that's just me. But it's like they're still playing, you know, 70s and 80s rock that those CDs have to be worn out. They've played them so many times. Mm-hmm. It's like a playlist. But the morning show is decent. But I'm even noticing, and I really noticed this when I started on the radio, was that they're missing their demographic. Like it's funny how, you know, Howard Stern's been able to evolve with the times, but some of these other ones, you can tell when the combination isn't appealing to millennials or, you know, a little younger than millennials or a little older than millennials, because they're struggling. They're bringing in new people all the time and they're, you know, mixing it all up. And it's kind of interesting to see, because you don't think of that, you know, you just think, yeah, well, they're on, we'll listen. But from a growth standpoint, some of these stations have had the same disc jockeys on there for 30 years. And it's like, you got to freshen it up, man. Come on. There's one local station that I bug all the time, 'cause I'm like, I could triple your numbers in your morning show, because you just, you know, it's classic country radio, which I really like the music, but their morning guys are just real monotone, real bass, you know. It's like, if you put a little pulse in that thing, woof, there's no telling what could happen.
So right.
A moving target all the time. You never know.
Yeah. One thing I would say too, is that, and one of the things I just didn't like about classic rock radio and things like that. I mean, I love classic rock. You know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s. And that's the music that I love, you know, 70s and 80s rock, the classic rock, especially the heavier stuff. But
unless you're a DJ for one of those stations,
right?
70s and 80s rock.
Exactly. But the problem is that, you know, I always loved Led Zeppelin, but it's like, there's just certain songs of theirs I never need to hear again.
Oh yeah. They play like four of them,
you know,
catalog, but they play like four songs.
I mean, it would be great. And that's why I think, you know, internet radio and podcasting and other things like that really do a good service to people, because there are so many albums out there of artists that we all love with great deep cuts.
Yeah.
That you never get to hear on the radio, and that, and like that, even local bands don't even perform.
Yes. And that is exactly the station I was talking about. There's songs that they play where you're like, you can almost set your watch to it. I know they're going to play it every day at this time. Like, just get rid of that garbage. You don't need it anymore.
Right. Exactly. And you know, so if they could just, you know, and the thing is, I mean, there's a whole process behind the songs that get played on the radio. You know, their arrangements are made to have these songs played and all of that stuff. So, you can't really buck that, because then there's rights and there's royalties and there's a budget that the station's running on. But I mean, come on, you know, drop a back of the rack song or something like that. Or, you know, there's songs,
you know, cause you get like a fresh Zeppelin tune you haven't heard in a while. It's like, oh yeah.
Right.
But, you know, I'm with you, man. I totally, and that's one of the reasons why that drove me to podcasts. It's either podcasts or audiobooks. Because a lot of, and definitely when you travel and you go to different cities, you know, yeah, I don't want to spin around and look for the right station. I just want to, you know, put some noise on, or I want to listen to a certain conversation or something. Mm-hmm. And it's much easier with, well, satellite radio's made it a lot easier, but with podcasts, you know, I've got my, I don't know, I probably have a core group of, right now it's probably three or four that I listen to religiously every week. Same, you know, have to hear them. But then there's probably another three or four that, like, I'll see what they're doing. You know, I'll see if they get somebody good on or what's happening. Because there's always variety, and it's really, you know, you take like a Joe Rogan, who's, you know, made ridiculous amounts of money now doing this. You know, he's a great interviewer and he gets great guests, but, you know, he didn't just start either. He's one of the originals.
Yeah. He's been at it for a long time. Him and like Adam Carolla. And a bunch of other ones are really, you know, the grandfathers of this genre here. And they've done very well with it. They've gotten their own, you know, they've just gotten the right combination where they're able to appeal to a lot of people and make, you know, good money doing it and keep people employed and everything. And I'm still trying to find that myself. You know,
I was listening to Adam Carolla's show for a while. I really found that it's really kind of a scattered collage of Adam Carolla stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to town for a show, and I see a lot of comedians. Like, that's my thing. I don't golf. I don't fish. I don't do any of that. I, you know, travel to see comedians, and then I do my podcast. That's where all my money goes. But, I went to see him. He came to town. So I brought my wife. I'm like, hey, let's go check this out. And it was some weird kind of show that he was doing, and it was in a different venue than I was used to. But I actually left. I walked out. It was, it was like him on a stage with a big screen going through his childhood photo album, talking about the pictures in his photo album. I'm like, am I being punked here? Like, what's going on? This is ridiculous. So we left. I didn't even stay for the whole show. It was like, and people, that place was packed. I'm like, come on. That's not saying much. But, you know, once you get to a certain level, like Adam Carolla, or, you know, Joe Rogan's in a whole nother world, but people are just going because of the name, you know, like, recognize the name.
Right.
But I can honestly tell you, I've seen Joe Rogan twice now, I think. And it's not even the same game. Like, he is so good at podcasting, but his true passion is stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. And he is the best there is. I mean, Dave Chappelle, you know, I mean, there's some other legendary ones out there, but he's probably like the, you know, the Richard Pryor of our time. Like, he is just so well constructed. His jokes, everything is solid. You know, I would put him up against anybody. And they actually just did a double bill with Joe Rogan and Dave Chappelle. That would have been solid money right there. Those guys are, you know, that's as good as it gets right now. But I, you know, that helps his podcast exposure, really helps his draw on his comedic run, you know, because not everybody knows. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go down the street and ask people, they don't know Joe Rogan does comedy. They remember him from Fear Factor and they remember him from his podcast.
Right, right. Or boxing or whatever, or martial arts or whatever he does too.
Yeah. I've been doing some voiceover for a UFC YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, these big long whatevers, but I tell you, I do a lot of stuff in voiceover, but saying those UFC fighter names is the biggest challenge in my life. Like, they absolutely have no phonetic, nothing to them. They're just garbage thrown together. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be a champion UFC fighter, why don't you have a stage name? Like, why don't you come up with something somebody could say? It is really to the point where I'm like questioning whether I want to continue to do it or not.
Wow.
You can't even ask anybody. They're like, I don't know how you say that.
Yeah. Or they, I guess, like, you know, a lot of long foreign names and everything that, you know, are probably in that country that they're from could be like Bob Smith, you know, but
you look on YouTube and you'll get four different interpretations of how it should be said. And it's like, right. Well, you know, who's right, who's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's crazy, but he's doing that stuff live. Like, mm-hmm. you know, during the event, it really makes you go, wow, it's, you know, mm-hmm. good for him. He just signed the $100 million deal. Come on. That's crazy.
That is, that's insane. That's, hey, I wish I was, you know,
he just did a new SiriusXM for a 5-year contract, $100 million a year.
Jeez, oh whiz, man. That's something. Boy, have, that gives you something to shoot for.
Budget, but I could live on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I know you, one thing, and I don't know if you've ever come across this too. I'm also a musician. You know, one thing, you know, when I was playing a lot, I don't play as much anymore. You know, we still get out and play a bit. I'm playing an acoustic duo. I used to do full bands for years and years and years. I got tired of all the personalities, as you know, you kind of mentioned, you get, you know, so I whittled it down from a full band into just two people.
Yeah.
And when we play about 5 or 10 times a year, and it's almost like a comedy act, and two acoustic guitars and a comedy act. And the one thing that I've, you know, come across, and I find that I do this as a habit, is people say, oh, you remind me of this, or you remind me of this act or that act, you're similar to them. I make it a point not to listen to those people, because I'm afraid I'm going to inadvertently rip them off or have something in one of my songs that sounds like one of theirs. And I'm scared to death of getting into trouble or being accused of being imitative of somebody or trying to cop somebody else's act. Have you ever run into something like that?
You know, it's funny you say that. I did a podcast earlier today on my show, and the person I was talking to had two pictures behind, and they were like, you know, I don't want to have to pay any royalties. And I'm like, what? That's crazy. But I get, you know, it's funny you say that, because I get a lot of times I get a lot of people that reference Bill Murray, mm-hmm. you know, with me. But I was in a town, I don't know, probably 25 minutes north of here. And I think I had a hat on, and I went in, and it was a coffee shop. And the lady ahead of me was taking forever, and the little lady behind the counter was whatever. And then I finally get up to the counter, the gate, like, just go down, blah, blah, blah. She's just going 100 miles an hour. And I'm like, I just need a black coffee with, you know, a couple ice cubes. And she's like, is that it for you? I'm like, yeah, that's it for me. She goes, you're not Bill Murray, are you? And I'm like, no, you know. And then I thought, well, if my coffee's going to be free, then maybe I am, you know. No, it's not me. And then she turns around and looks at me, and she goes, you'd tell me if you were, right? I'm like, well, yeah, yeah, I don't know. Thing ever. I'm like, yeah, okay. And I don't, you know, my opinion, I don't look like him. I did at one time. I look, you know, I put on a few LBs since then, but it was the strangest thing. But I do get that more often than not, where people will say that kind of thing. But I don't worry about any of that crap. You know, with my we used to use some short snippets of music in the podcast before we went on YouTube. And now when you go to YouTube, that just doesn't go very far. Mm-hmm. But you know, for me, it's like, hey, I'll take the attention. If you guys want to, you know, start a war over, you said this or you said that, or copyright this, you know, I'm not stealing anything. I'm not using songs. I'm not doing any of that. All my podcast stuff. Actually, that's another interesting story, is when I did my podcast intro, I wanted my intro song to sound like Welcome Back, Carter. Is it Welcome Back, Carter? No, it's just Welcome Back.
I don't even Cotter. Remember. Welcome Back, Cotter.
Is that what it is?
That's what's the show, but there was a song by John Sebastian. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. Yeah.
And my producer at the time was this like 22-year-old kid, and it was perfect. He was magical with everything, but we didn't, you know, much like you said before, you just don't relate, because like my Caddyshack jokes don't relate to a 22-year-old. They don't, he don't know what that is, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Sat down. We went to his studio. He sat down and pulled out every instrument you could imagine, from the to the clapping to bass guitar. He played every instrument and made that Welcome Back original to use for my deal. And I paid handsomely for it, believe me. But actually, it wasn't that bad. But it was so magical to watch. I almost got more out of watching him make that music by ear, just by ear. And it was like, wow. There's a lot of, you know, different avenues to that, to, you know, but it was really, when you see somebody with their craft like that, like he, you know, maybe 25, I don't know, but just every instrument, no problem, played it by ear, filled in the spot for the deal. And, you know, I don't know what you use for software, but he had Pro Tools going, and he must've had 10 or 11 tracks in there with all the different instruments. He's like, you hear that clapping in there? We got to do the clapping. I'm like, I don't hear anything. And here it is. You know, it sounds perfect and it's original, so we can use it. But yeah, we modeled it after that. It was pretty funny. But he, you know, to see someone do that, it's awesome. So if you're, you know, making music and comedy, I mean, hats off to you, man. I'd love to go do stand-up comedy once, and I think someday I will. Mm-hmm. But when you're doing music and you're in front of people and you're singing, oh man.
it's kind of strange. We're the kind of act that we have, we're called the Uncle Moldy Show. There's two of us, and the comedy is some people have compared us to the Smothers Brothers. I mean, we play acoustic guitars, but the thing is, the comedy, the Smothers Brothers would play straight songs, just regular folk songs, but their comedy was the back and forth between the two of them.
Sure.
You know, my band partner isn't really a crowd talker, so I pretty much do all the talking. The comedy is like pretty much me bantering with the crowd, and the punchlines are in the songs.
Nice.
Okay. But the thing is that, and what I run into is that the thing is that true stand-up comedians don't respect acts like ours. And they also, for a lot of the reasons why they don't respect people like Carrot Top, or they're kind of considered outsiders because they're not up there just speaking and delivering their own wit.
You got something else.
You have something else up there with you. So, you know, I mean, some people, some stand-ups don't look down on it, but others do. So that's why we don't do a lot of comedy clubs. You know, we've done like one or two over the years, but we didn't really, the people liked it, but the other comedians didn't, and they weren't exactly warm and fuzzy to us.
You know what that reminds me of is Williams and Ree.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever hear them?
Williams and Ree.
The Indian and the white guy. That's what they used to go by.
Oh, really? Oh, no.
Yeah, that's real. And it, they were local to here. I don't know, but they sang some stuff. There's no way they could ever see the light of day in this modern era. There's bad news, but it was, you know, I was whatever, 12, 13 year old kid. It was funny to listen to. They'd make jokes and sing and, you know, about how, you know, Ford is found on road dead and Pontiac and, you know, they had little, but they were words that you can't say now.
Oh yeah. Know? Yeah.
But it was funny as hell. And that's what, yeah, you know, what you're telling me, that kind of reminds me of that, where you're kind of throwing a little in, but yet, you know, entertain. Are you doing all original tunes?
Yeah.
Oh man, look at you.
All original stuff. Yeah. We've got close to 50 songs now. Not all of our songs are funny songs. Yeah. You know, I'd say probably about 25 of them. 25 of them are funny. Then there's probably about another 10 that I think are funny, but nobody else does. And
well, that's where I would be concerned, is if you have 50 songs in your catalog. Mm-hmm. I sit around the house all day and I could come up with little ditties, you know, little tunes. But how do you make sure that this guitar riff isn't stealing from a Stones riff, or, you know, like we were saying earlier, like how do you make sure that this doesn't sound like Brown Eyed Girl? This is Blue Eyed Girl. It's different. You know, like, how do you know? You just, because you can't possibly know every song that's out there in the universe.
You can't. When I write something, I just go with it. And if it doesn't ring a bell, I mean, because there's been times when I've been writing something, I'm like, oh, no, wait a minute. That's this song. We can't do that. Yeah, or at least we don't record it and try to, you know, release it or anything under our name. Right. So, I mean, it's got to be impossible to know. I mean, and just like, too, when you're doing stand-up comedy, you know, it's impossible to know that somebody didn't say a joke. You think of a joke, and it's impossible that some other comedian didn't have the same idea 30 years ago. There's some comedian you never heard of that played it, that said it in a club that you've never heard of. You know, and it's possible, you know, the law of averages and the law of probability would say that's going to happen, you know, but I also think too, that's different than, you know, going out and, you know, like some comedians do, they go to comedy clubs, they write down other people's material and they go out and do their material behind their back. Right. And there have been a lot of comedians over the years that have been joke stealers that do that kind of thing. And that's really not cool. You know, some of them got away with it because of who they were. I'm not going to mention names, but I've heard some pretty prestigious people have done that. Yeah. But that's what I try to do. I try to, because, like, you know, people actually compared us to Tenacious D, the Jack Black thing.
Oh, sure.
So I made it a point never to listen to Tenacious D. I have no problem with Jack Black. He's a fine actor. He's a fine musician. I've heard him play. I've seen his movies. He's a fine person. I have nothing against him as a human, but I am just not going to do anything that's going to get me doing something that could be conceived as ripping him off. So I'm just going to put that out of my mind. There's no such thing as those guys. I'm not going to listen to it until I decide to give up one day. Then maybe I'll go back and listen to it, but I'm just not going to do anything that could possibly pull something from them into my act. You know,
who was it that said that? That seems like a long shot, especially if you're doing acoustic stuff.
Right.
That Tenacious D stuff is like garbage that people our age doesn't listen to.
Right.
Not all like, you know, but I haven't heard his old collection, so maybe somebody I don't, but that's funny. Cause it's interesting when people can relate you to somebody completely off the wall that you would never, you know, like Jack Black's really, he's an actor and he does this music thing on the side, but he's gotten quite a ways with it. But like, if, you know, and I haven't seen you perform or anything, but never in a million years would I would think those two would connect. You know what I mean? It's interesting to, you know, it'd be fun to talk to those people and say, how are you making this connection? Because, you know, just like me with Bill Murray, like I would think more than anything, some of my mannerisms, not my look. But it's interesting how people perceive you and your relate, you know, that's interesting. Now I got to dig up some YouTube of you, jamming on the stage somewhere.
I'll send you some. Yeah.
Do you have albums out?
We have one CD out, but I actually have, I don't even think it's out anymore. But I'll send you some YouTube stuff and I'll send you some video clips to watch just to get a feel for what we do. And the other thing that you had mentioned too is that being aware of the crowd that we're performing in front of. You know, we've made some jokes and I've done so many of them that, you know, people our age, and I'm 51, you know, I'm a Generation X. Our generation, the baby boomers before us, would get the joke, but these millennials have no idea. Like, they're like, what, who's that? Huh? You know,
offended.
yeah. Or they'll get offended, but you know, something too, there's a one, and I do, you know, go out to comedy clubs from time to time. Cause when we do our, you know, the Uncle Moldy show, and then when we do, I also perform with a troupe, and we don't make any money off of this or anything, but what we do is it's me, a fella and a girl, three of us, and we go out and we perform just to warm up for other comedians. Old comedy bits, Abbott and Costello, Nichols and May.
Oh my.
Bob and Ray. Do you remember those guys?
But they sound awesome.
Yeah. Bob and Ray, Bob Elliott was Chris Elliott's father.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
and they started in radio back in the '40s, and you'd see them on TV and radio throughout the years. And, I think Bob Elliott just passed away. Oh, in the last couple of years, he was like 96 or something. He was really up there. But do yourself, I have a homework. I'll give you a homework assignment.
Yeah. How often do you do that? That's like, it's just, is it like layers of an onion here? That's like, yeah, a whole other deal. When you go up and you sing your tunes, mm-hmm, that's one thing. When you go up and do comedy and it's your comedy, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But when you go up in front of people and try and do other people's shtick, that's not easy to do, because there's a lot of pieces to that that need to be just right. Otherwise, you're going to have a rough night.
Right. And the thing is that when we do this, again, we don't take any credit for writing that material, and we don't take any pay for it either. You know, sure. So we're not making money off of somebody else's back. We're just strictly doing it to put something on stage to warm up for some comedians. And do
the people know who that is? Like, if you came out and did...
We announce who it is. We say who it is. We'll say, this is a bit by Nichols and May. It's called, you know, this is Bob and Ray, the Komodo Dragon, you know, and we'll do them. And then, but we don't take any money for it. You know, we would never do anything like make money off of that without getting permission, or do anything that's like considered unethical.
How does it relate? Like, so the Komodo Dragon one, you obviously found it very funny when it was live, or when it was actually current, and now you're doing it to an audience who has no idea who these people are and came to see whoever. How is it received?
They actually like it.
Really?
They actually like it. They actually like it now. But now, on the other hand, yeah, and this is something too, where I'd say, God, it was probably about a year and a half ago, we were performing. We had a show to do this, and a couple of people came to see us, but before we performed, actually, there were a couple of girls that were there. And I gotta say, again, you know, I'm no prude. You know, when I was 18 years old, you know, I used to listen to Dice and Kinnison and stuff like that, but these girls were actually about, you know, they were like, you know, light years beyond those two. Okay. And it was to the point where I was almost embarrassed, because the thing was that it was, really, really dirty, really, really, you know, scraping the bottom of the barrel, but it wasn't that funny, really. You know, I mean, it seemed like it was more for shock value. Yeah. And I was glad my wife didn't come to see us that night, 'cause I would have been embarrassed in front of my wife.
Yeah.
And when you embarrass me, that's saying something, you know. And and there are a lot of people nowadays that are comics nowadays that, you know, I guess there's sort of a genre out there of, you know, just beyond sleaze, I guess it is, that, you know, a lot of them do.
The part that I don't understand is, and I find it right now, you're spot on with the women. Mm-hmm. I equate it to this. If I'm doing a set and I'm making fat jokes, and I'm a heavier dude.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, it's, or if you're a black person, you're making black jokes. Mm-hmm. It just feels to me like that's cheating. You know, that's a slow, you're not being funny. You're taking all the gravy off the top. That's easy. You know, mm-hmm, like it's easy for me to make fat jokes. I could do that all day, but I find a lot with women that's their cheat, is to go to stuff that they can't say when they're not on stage.
Right. Right.
Graphic, gratuitous, just like, what are you, who, you know, what do your parents think of you kind of thing?
Right.
And really, you know, because I watch a lot of stuff on Netflix and I follow a few women, but boy, it is so easy for them to go so far off the rails where you're like, that's mm-hmm. not, that's just, you're looking at like shock comedy there. And I, you know, maybe some people like that, but I, you know, I guess if you're a person who wants to hear a woman talk like that, or, you know, even a man, even if a man's just in the gutter, mm-hmm. you know, who wants to hear that? I don't know. I'm sure they're out there, mm-hmm. but it's just kind of a, I look at it like, you know, that's the low hanging fruit. It, you know, it's too easy for women to, you know, talk about men being pigs or whatever, you know, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that you bring that up because I, you know, did you say anything to him? How did you handle it?
I didn't say anything to him, but there was a lady, a friend of ours, a friend of my wife and mine that came to see us, and, you know, she was watching these girls and she said that, you know, if I wasn't waiting for you to come on, I just would have gotten up and left.
You know, what do you think of that? Like,
yeah, I don't know. Yeah. And the thing is, it's like, and I'm not trying to say, you know, that, you know, a female comic can't get up and do whatever they want to say. You know, I mean, it's up to them. They want to do it. If it works for them, that's funny. But, you know, I just feel like, I don't know. I mean, you know, it's a free country. They can get up and say what they want. Maybe I'm wrong for criticizing it or whatever, but, it was just like, just way off the rails.
Yeah,
you know, just way off the rails. And there are a lot of, I know not a lot of other, you know, female comedians that really feel the same way about that. You know, I mean, I worked with Tina Fey last year.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you what, Tina Fey, I mean, you know, she can get a little edgy once in a while, but I think she's an absolute genius.
Really?
She is an absolute genius. I've watched a lot of her shows like Kimmy Schmidt, like 30 Rock. Where she's been a big part of the writing of these shows.
Yeah.
And I happen to find that stuff hilarious because the thing is, like, I like with her a lot of the references that she makes because she's in my age group. I think she and I are close in age. I might be a little bit older than her.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, and plus having worked with her last year and seen how she works behind the scenes and works the humor in and everything, she's top of the line. You know, she's,
yeah, I've heard good things. I know she's a real force in the comedy world. She's mm-hmm. she's pretty funny. I don't always agree with her politically and her some of her views, but that's
sure, sure. Well, that's, you know,
but she with that 30 Rock, she that was on forever. That was huge.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big deal, and I she was on Saturday Night Live for a long time.
Yeah, she was. She was, and not only performing but writing as well, you know.
Yeah.
And her husband, he was like the head of the musical director of Saturday Night Live for a number of years, and he was also a big part of the Kimmy Schmidt.
Really?
And yes. And he's just absolutely brilliant too. And you know the thing is that's really good about, you know, getting into these movies and television shows and having a bit part, you know, you're doing a small part and you're there and everything is going on. You know, you have a small part. You don't have that much to remember. You don't have that much to focus on. So you get the opportunity to watch.
Mm.
You really get the opportunity to watch. And especially when I did Gotham, I didn't have any lines. You know, my character's name was Dale. I got shot by Mr. Penn. I was one of the Penguin's henchmen, and I was supposed to be a big dumb guy. He was deaf, dumb, and mute, and dumb as a post. Okay. So I got to be on there, and
that's then, huh?
So I'll tell you how I passed the audition was by making dumb faces. Okay. I auditioned. I've told this story a lot. I've auditioned for, Gotham. I had two parts I was auditioning for in that episode. One of them was a humanoid that was killing people. They lived in an underground tunnel, and whenever people would come in, he would rip people to shreds. So to audition for that part, I had to snarl and growl and act like the Tasmanian devil. and the thing that sucked about that was the thing that would have sucked about getting that part. Well, it would have been great to get that part. But the problem was that they only showed the person's face like in a blur because it was during a fight.
Oh,
okay. Now the part that I got was the character's name was Dale. And Dale was, like I said, a big, dumb, mute guy who just walked around. And to pass that audition, I had to make dumb faces. You know, so I'm just like, you know, reacting to what they were reading out of the script. I'm like, they're like, we want him. All right. So, you know, really all I had to do was, you know, I had a couple of things I had to do. I had to carry a tray of food in. I had to put it down. I had to answer a door, but I didn't have any lines, you know, so, but I was watching the director, you know, move people around the room, set up different shots, watching the actors doing different things, you know, watching, you know, how hair and makeup took care of people, watching how the lighting guys were moving the lighting around and everything. And I had a small part too in the Kimmy Schmidt, where I had a couple of lines in that one with the main characters, but I didn't. Again, you know, I got a chance to do a lot of watching,
yeah,
as well. And both of them were just, you know, absolute educations, and they're just wonderful, wonderful experiences. You know,
so cool. I you know, with the voiceover stuff that I do, you know, I had the chance to go to Ireland for like a, I don't know, like a retreat, they call it, you know, and I spent a week over there with some of the best in the business. And it was just fascinating to, I was way too early in my career to be there. Like, it was a, you know, the guy who was putting the whole thing on was a friend of mine, or is a friend of mine. And, mm-hmm. You know, and he kind of like, you know, nudged me that way and took care of me on setting everything up. But anyway, you know, we show up and you got the chauffeur taking you to the big castle. And then some of the biggest names in the industry were there. One lady doing character voices, just, you know, rattling them off like you and I talking now, like everything from bunnies to babies to everything. And then, you know, Joe Cipriano was there, who's like, you know, when you hear the voice on Fox or the voice on, I think CBS, you know, tonight on The Simpsons, that he did that for a long time. So just to see these people in action, and much like you're saying, it's just fascinating because they've been in it for so long. They know all the ups and downs and ins and outs, and, you know, they're done with all the, you know, fun to be on set bullshit. And they're like doing it, like, mm-hmm. They're way established, and it's just fun to see them do their craft, you know, and they're good at it. Mm-hmm. So it really is inspiring, to where I would imagine if you can spend all day on set, and that Kimmy Schmidt thing, that's a big movie, like a real deal. Like, 'cause mm-hmm. It was a show and then they made movies, right?
Yeah. They made a movie out of the show. Yeah. And, yeah.
It's a big deal, big draw. You should be on the cover of Teen Beat or something any day now, right?
Tiger Beat. Yeah. Whatever. Or 16. We're showing our age. Yeah. We'd have a room full of millennials saying, what's that? 16 Teen Beat, Tiger Beat, you know. That was it was pretty well received. You know, it was nominated for 2 Emmys, you know, because it was it wasn't an Oscar, it would have been an Emmy, because it was actually considered, since it went to Netflix, it was actually considered a TV movie because it didn't go out in theaters, I guess. Yeah. So Titus Burgess got nominated for Best Male Actor. What's that?
The bald guy?
Yes, yes. He's hilarious. And then the whole movie itself got nominated. I think it was for Best Comedy Movie, maybe.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Did you get to go to the award show?
No.
Was it 2020 where nobody got to go?
Well, it was, you know, I think it was really only for the main characters.
Yeah.
Because the thing was that, you know, I wasn't like part of the show. I was just a character that was in the movie. Yeah. And I was just somebody that they kind of met in passing. I wasn't somebody that had like a big storyline or a backstory or was a regular. Sure. But the interesting thing about that movie was that, that was the second project I got to be in that had Carol Kane, and I didn't get to meet her on either one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That.
Yep. It was Gotham was the first one, because she was played Oswald Cobblepot's mother in Gotham, and she had actually died 2 or 3 seasons before I was on. And then in The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, the movie, she was filming somewhere else. She wasn't in the scene that I was in. She was filming somewhere else.
Well, and she fits that Gotham part perfectly. She could work at Batman movies her whole life. Mm-hmm. You missed a golden opportunity there. That would have been a good meet and greet right there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. She's absolutely delightful from what I heard from other people. Both people on Kimmy Schmidt and on Gotham said she's just an absolute delight to work with. Just a very, very nice person and very, very talented actress too. She's just an excellent actress.
Yeah. Yeah. You well, you hear that a lot about people who are well established in the industry and have been around a while. Like, I think all the people that are a pain in the ass get weeded out. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. 'cause a lot of times when you hear about these people that have been around forever, they're just a dream to work with. They're good people. Da, 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 da. And who knows, maybe that's just Hollywood's way of saying that. But, you know, I do think that a lot of these problem people get booted out early and, you know, don't stay around very long.
No, they don't. They don't. Yeah. Unless you're really, really, really good.
Yeah.
You know, there is just no tolerance for pains in the butt on these sets and things like that. And I can't say I witnessed anything, but I've heard some things about people that were just, they just said, all right, that's it. That's it. You know, we're just not having this anymore. And, you know, there's a lot of money invested in this.
Really?
You know, and truthfully, I think it should have been done a lot more. I mean, that mess with Charlie Sheen at the end of Two and a Half Men. You know, if I was the producer of that show and he would have started that crap, I would have killed his character and just moved on.
Yeah. Well, I think he was a big part of that show. Like they probably struggled with the idea of, can they carry it without him? Like I would watch it with them, and I've seen a few of them with the Ashton Kutcher one, but it's not the same, you know. Right. Ironically, that show that Ashton Kutcher did with that guy who's in jail now from that 70s show, The Ranch is what the show's called.
Oh, and, right.
And that guy, I don't know, he's doing something with kids or something, I don't know. But when he left, they tried to fill him with Dax Shepard, and it's like, When you have a primary character in a show that's been on for a few seasons, it's hard to replace them. People get set in their ways, and like, mm-hmm. you can't take Charlie out of that show because he's the show. You know, the
right.
goofy brother and the dorky kid only goes so far. You know, Ashton Kutcher came in and it went for a few seasons after. You know, it was successful, but yeah, that's a good point. I think. Just the little bit that I've been involved with the voiceover world and actors and whatnot, it's different, you know, like it's different. You know, the mindset and the people, it's a different way of life, man. I watched a thing the other day with David Letterman, and he has that show. My Next Guest Needs No Introduction. And he had Robert Downey Jr. on. And I had kind of always seen that Robert Downey Jr. was maybe, you know, he was a kid actor. He's always been in that life and whatever. And he actually seemed a little more human on this particular show with David Letterman. But it was so interesting because he lives in this, he's got like acres on the shore in Malibu, and he has all these animals, and he's trying to make it seem like he's a little hobby farmer. And David Letterman's out there scooping up pig crap and whatever. And he's like, you've never been down here, have you? And Robert Downey Jr. is like, no, I don't come out here. I had nothing to do with it. This is a wife thing. And it's just like, it was so like appropriate to the what I had imagined Robert Downey Jr. to be like, because he's, you know, he's just never been in the real world. His parents were famous. He's famous. Mm-hmm. It's really an interesting thing. And to think that you're, you know, if you're going to meet Carol Kane somewhere, that's, you know, that's someone who's been through quite a few roles and quite a few different shows. I mean, what an interesting, you should get her on your show.
I wish I'd love to get her on. I'd love to get her on, you know? Yeah. But the thing is like, and my point when it comes to this, you know, every band that I've been in over the years, every project that I've done, you know, the national ones, you know, on network television, the ones where, you know, the bands I've been in, everything that I've done, you know, I've done what was expected. I've given 100%.
Yeah.
And, you know, and, you know, what I just said about him, you know, it's just like, I just don't have patience for somebody who's not going to take it the same way I am. And if it's something that I can't dedicate myself to or something like that, I just won't do it.
Right.
I'll just say, look, I'll let somebody know up front, you know. I mean, sometimes people ask me to come out for community theater. And I don't have anything against community theater. I have a lot of friends in community theater, and there are a hell of a lot of people in community theater that are very, very good. But what I say to people is that, you know, the fact that I have management now, I can get called to go to New York at any time.
Yeah.
And from where I live, New York is probably about a 4-hour trek. Philly's about an hour. Okay. And, you know, if my manager says to me, you've got to be in New York at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, that means I'm probably getting home around, you know, between 4 and 6 in the afternoon. I have to go do it. And there's no question about it. You know, that was the agreement that I have with my manager. Okay. If, you know, I have a lead or I have a big part in a community theater play, and then I get booked in something and I have to go do it, I have to go do it.
Right.
And I would never, and out of the respect I have for my friends that are doing community theater and putting together these productions, I would never do that to them.
Right. Yeah,
the only time I would ever miss a performance or do anything like that is if I was laying dead in a ditch somewhere, or if I was in a car accident, or if there was, you know, a monsoon or something like that, where I just couldn't get there. I would never, you know, and again, it's out of respect for that project. It's not, you know, that, you know, doing a community theater show is beneath me, or that, you know, just, you know, something like that, you know,
time commitment, man. That's huge commitment. It's not, you know, almost to the point where, depending on the size of your role that you're acting on a TV show or in a movie, I mean, theater can go on for months. Like, you gotta learn the whole thing. You gotta do that. And then you're running the show every night, you know, for 4 days in a row, you know, I mean, multiple shows. That's a huge commitment. People don't understand what kind of time you have to allot to that for, to make it work, to make it fly. And yeah, that's cause I mean, you're, that, yeah, that's interesting. Huh. Very interesting.
But again, it's just out of respect to a fellow artist, you know, just out of respect to a fellow artist, you know, and I've had people flake on me and I didn't appreciate it. You know, luckily I was able to pull it off, you know, and able to get it done. But, you know, I just, you know, ethically, I was just not raised to behave like that towards other people and to treat other people's projects, you know, like that. You know, I would never do that to somebody. So that's kind of, you know, that's my thing there. And then that's why I just don't do them, just because of, you know, like I said, you know, I have to be ready to go at any time. And that's even the thing too, you know, whenever I book my own shows with a murder mystery, I always have a plan B.
Yeah.
I always have a plan B.
How often does that happen where you get called and you got to go?
It's really only happened once. Mm-hmm. It's really only happened once. And the thing is, it's like a lot of my murder mystery shows are on weekends. You know, sometimes like Friday, it can get a little risky when it comes to scheduling and things like that, because I could get called up to go up there on a Friday, or something could, like if something is shooting on a Friday, I could let somebody know and somebody could fill in. You know, all the actors in my company know all the parts that we do in these shows and everything. So it's not a problem to ask for a replacement or to grab somebody. As a matter of fact, though, you know, when I told you I live in Maryland, when I filmed The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt last year, I had to go to Congers, New York, which is above New York City. It's almost in the Catskills. Okay.
Okay.
So, I left that set at midnight. I drove all the way back to Maryland. I got to my house at about 5. I slept for about 3 hours and I had to drive out to Cumberland, Maryland, which was all the way out in the western panhandle of Maryland, to do a murder mystery show. The thing was that there was the possibility that the filming could go on into the next day, into Saturday. I would have had to stay over and film the next day. So again, you know, I had all my people and I had a backup person say, look, you know, if this goes over, can you guys cover me? And I was keeping in touch with them whenever I get a break from filming or whatnot, and let them know what was going on. And
a lot of moving parts, man.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You got to make it happen, brother. You got to make it happen.
You're not doing that right now, are you? Can you still do those?
Not right now. Everything is closed down because of COVID. If you think about it, the trains and boats and everything are just really moving petri dishes.
Yeah, that's
true. And plus the fact too is that we would have to do it in masks, and you can't hear us. It would be too muffled in masks, and it just wouldn't work.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good. No, I think I've done one of those once. Mm-hmm. At like dinner. It was like a dinner and mystery theater thing or something. It was interesting. I don't know if I could do it every weekend though, or multiple weekends. That's kudos to you. I think I did it once. Yeah. That's cool. How long have you been doing that?
Well, I got involved in it in 2016. I was doing a passion play at a church. And I met Herb Otter. Otter Productions was his company. He owned the company at that time. And we became friends doing the passion play. And then I started performing with him for about two seasons. And then he decided that he wanted to just do something else. And he split the company into two. I got a couple of the venues, and he gave a couple of the venues to somebody else.
Okay.
And then I started the Foul Players of Perryville at that time. And then, he started, and then he went on and did his thing. But, and even, the other company, JR Productions, we work together all the time, and we use a lot of the same actors we work together. We're not like rivals or competitors or anything like that. There are just certain venues that are hers, which I'm not going to step on her toes. And there's some venues that are mine, but she performs with me. It's Jill Redding. She was actually in The Wire season two. And she played Dolores the barmaid.
How cool is that?
Yeah. Yeah. She's great. She's absolutely wonderful. We use a lot of the same actors. And we talk all the time too. She'll say, I have a show this weekend. I want to use, him, her, and her, and we just make sure that, we don't overbook anybody and that we don't step on each other's toes when it comes to booking actors and things like that. So we work together very well. She's wonderful and we're good friends and everything here. So
that's cool. I've done it once, and I've known there's it's all over, it's very popular, but COVID, thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I know COVID killed me this year, when it comes to that. And it was just, I lost a lot of shows, and I also lost Polar Express, 'cause we were doing that on, for the Christmas season.
Oh really?
Yeah. It was, we were doing it on the train that we normally work on out in Western Maryland. And, that was that's actually how I met Steve Joyner.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Customer.
Well, here's what happened. We booked the Polar Express on the Western Maryland Scenic Railroad, and we had, Eddie Deason lives in Cumberland, Maryland. He's the actor who played the know-it-all kid. He was also Eugene in Grease, and he was the guy on the Ferris wheel with the mannequin in 1941. Yep. So he was the voice of the know-it-all kid in the Polar Express. And I was Facebook friends with him. And I said, the people were saying, does anybody know how to get a hold of Eddie Deason? Because they wanted him to come sign autographs because he was in the, did a voice in the Polar Express. And I said, well, I kind of know him. So I sent him an email, and he gave me Steve Joyner's contact information. Yeah. And then I reached out to Steve, and Steve went to the railroad and booked Eddie. And then we became friends after that.
Looks like somebody that would have been in Revenge of the Nerds too.
You know something? There's an interesting story about that. And I've heard him tell this story. He actually, I think he said he auditioned for Revenge of the Nerds, but did not get it.
Oh, really?
Because they didn't want somebody, and this is kind of mean for them to say to him, but I've heard this in other interviews, and I believe what the story was that they didn't want a real nerd. They wanted to dress an actor as a nerd.
Ouch. That's horrible.
That's brutal, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Wow. You're too nerdy for Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looks like he's done plenty. He's not exactly living check to check, so.
Yeah, yeah, he's done a lot of things here. So,
a list. Wow.
Yeah. Well, Darren, you know, it's been great talking to you today here. You know, I've got a chance to get to know you and everything. I'm going to have to wrap it up here in just a couple of minutes here, but could you tell us what's going on? What do you have coming up? You know, this is your time to shamelessly plug
for
yourself,
sure,
or whatever you have.
We're doing more shows. We're trying to get to 3 episodes a week. But right now we're humming around 2 and, you know, just really trying to bring a light, comedy to, this ugly 2020 season. Hopefully 2021 will be, a little bit brighter, but, got a good group together and we're churning out shows and trying to make people laugh and forget about the mess for a little while. Also doing a lot of voiceover stuff. If anybody needs any voiceover stuff, you can find me at DarrenKVO.com. Otherwise, the podcast is the DK Project Podcast. Email is dkprojectpodcast@gmail.com. Just reach out. We're always looking for guests, and we're always looking for talent, if you can say that. Talent.
Absolutely. And so you can go to your main website and hear your podcast. What other is it on, like Apple and other ones too?
Everything and anything you can, anywhere you can find a podcast, you'll find it. We're on iHeartRadio, Spotify. I got a little different contract than Joe Rogan did. But Spotify, we're on, you know, Google, podcasts, Apple, Stitcher. Oh, there's so many of them. I don't even know anymore. I have, my website lady just calls me, "Hey, there's a new one. All right, put us on there." And it's done. So yeah, we, any avenue you want, but the easiest way is to go to the website and you could download episodes there. We've got, I just recorded 132 today. So there's 131 out there, for your ears to listen to. So it should probably, if you start now, it would probably take you into the new year before you have to rinse and repeat.
Right. So, right.
Back to back to back to back. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being with us. I've enjoyed having you. I've had a lot of fun speaking with you tonight and everything. And, it's been great. So, make sure, you know, folks, you tune in, you know, to the DK Project, listen to his podcast. If you need a good voiceover artist, make sure you hit him up. Yes. And thank you all for listening. We've listened to Darren Kmeyer. Is that right?
That's right.
Darren Kmeyer on Foul Players Radio. And thank you for listening and have a great holiday.
Thanks, man.
The holidays are here and we have a fantastic gift idea. Foul Players Radio guest Barbara Bustard has just released a book. It's called The Art of Healing, 12 step-by-step meditative art exercises for improved physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. Art offers a way to process all that we experience in life, joy, sadness, excitement, anger, and everything in between. Art allows us to work through the stress that underlies all disease. The meditative exercises in this book are enjoyable and engaging. They are described in a very simple, clearly articulated manner and are appropriate for any level of artistic experience. It's available on Amazon for $29 and has gotten many positive reviews. Again, the title of the book is The Art of Healing, 12 step-by-step meditative art exercises for improved physical, mental, and spiritual well-being by Barbara Bustard. Pick up your copy today.